Indigenous land, First Nation people's lands, wherever we are today, and on your behalf, I pay our respects to elders past, present, and emerging. And I also want to acknowledge the good citizens of Melbourne who are in that winter of their discontent, I think, at the moment. I think certainly the feedback is that there's a lot of people really struggling, and we're grateful for them in keeping us safe by isolating themselves from coming to visit our beautiful part of the country. So I want to just acknowledge their struggle as well. Today is, can I ask people to just mute their microphones? Someone's got some noise coming in, which is fine, but it just gets a bit confusing. Today we wanted to talk about the arts and the benefit the arts has for us as we're going through this time of COVID and reimagining a new world post-COVID, and to think about how the arts can console us. And when we're talking about the arts, we're talking about it in its broadest sense, whether it's visual arts, performance arts, creative arts, literature, design, decorative arts, whatever form of art calls to your heart and soul and mind, it's included in this discussion. So we want to talk about how the arts can, how it can and it does make us better people. So we're sidestepping the discussion on the economic benefits of the arts or the arts is essential in a big C capital cultural meaning. So it's not about those societal meanings of the arts, but what it means for us as people. Alain de Botton and John Armstrong are two academic philosophers who have written a lot about the arts and the arts as therapy. And they talk about the arts as, that the purpose of the arts is to be a tool for us, that a tool is an extension of our bodies or our senses to make up for deficiencies in us. So if we can't bang nails in, we go and get a hammer and the hammer becomes the tool to help us. So they see the arts as performing that role, as being a tool to help us to remember, to express sorrow, to show joy and appreciation, to help us grow and to understand. And at the moment, and particularly thinking about our friends and family and colleagues in Melbourne, hopefully there's some space for them to turn to the arts to help them express their sorrow and difficulties at the moment. So we're going to start there. I'm going to start. Oh, I didn't introduce our guests. Sorry. My apologies. Rattling on and I haven't done my job properly. I want to absolutely welcome Liz Zito, who's the Director of Partnerships with Regional Arts Victoria. So welcome, Liz. And musician Peter Dennehy from Yak and Danda. Welcome, Peter, and my apologies for not acknowledging you earlier. But now I can turn to you after my spiel. So Liz, talk to us a little bit about how the arts consoles you. Or what you turn to for consolation.
What I turn to. I'm a family history addict. So currently my art is writing up my family history, and I've been researching for, I don't know, 20 odd years and writing up the story for my family. I'm not a writer, so it's a new venture for me. But then in saying that, that's one of the things that I object to about art. I mean, who is a writer and who isn't a writer? Like who's to say? So I'm enjoying that process of just playing with that. But I guess before that, I've grown up with music in the family, and I was very heavily involved in musical theatre, and then I've worked in festivals and venues and performing arts, and obviously now at Regional Arts Victoria. So my love of art actually led me to a career in the arts, which I never ever thought would be possible when I was a child of immigrant parents and never ever really didn't go to university or anything like that. So for me, it's been a real journey through the arts, that was my hobby or the things that I love to do, and now it's become a career, which is amazing, and I feel very blessed and lucky to have been able to find that.
So that childhood experience of music as an expression and as a place in which to ground yourself and then moving out from that into expression in arts.
Yeah, and a way of life, like, you know, for many people, it's just, you know, it just is. It's not, we never ever kind of went, all right, we're doing art by playing music or we're doing art by doing musical theatre or whatever it was. It's a way of life for many people.
Yeah. So it's integral to who you are and your experience of life. Yeah. Peter, for you, where do you turn for consolation in the arts?
I guess it's... I was just thinking while Liz was talking then about, say, the reasons you put music on when you're doing something. You know, like, I guess a lot of the arts that I enjoy is audio, you know, just because I play music. And it's a funny thing, you know, when I was a kid and I learned piano and violin as a kid and then started playing guitar and I wanted it when I was 11 or 12, I just wanted to be a country singer, you know, that's what I wanted to be when I grew up. And it's sort of gone beyond, you know, I'm involved with the country music scene in Australia, but, you know, I don't just sort of put myself in that category anymore, but it took a long time for me to sort of think, oh yeah, this is part of the arts, like playing at a festival, whether it's a Dorigo Bluegrass Festival or Yak Folk Festival or Tamworth or whatever, it's all part of that, you know, performance arts, really. Mm. A lot of people probably don't even have been doing it for years and don't sort of realise that it is part of that. But I guess for consolation, it's just really simple stuff, like just a good book, you know, or if I'm bottling my homebrew, I like playing bluegrass music because I'm a fiddle player and I'll put a bit of that, you know, a bit of Stanley Brothers on and I just enjoy listening to that while I'm brewing a beer. Mm-hmm. And then if I'm, you know, if we're just having an evening cooking or getting something ready of an evening, we might put on a bit of old 40s music or so, you know, so just little things. It's amazing how, you know, that's why there's theme music in a movie. Like, you know, as you think of some of the great movies and some of the great scenes, if they didn't have the music there, and this is just touching on one side of it, it's not probably really answering your question, but I suppose the same reason that there's music in a movie like that is sort of the same reason why I play a particular something for, probably not even for consolation, but just enhances the moment, you know, it just sort of embellishes it a bit. And I try to listen to something that's going to interest me while I'm doing a particular thing. When I listen to music, I'm not a huge... I don't listen to a lot of radio or we don't have a television. So that's never been a huge thing for me, but just if I listen to stuff, it'll either be podcasts or music,
Yeah. So that, again, like Liz, that childhood exposure to music, both being taught music formally, and I assume for you as well, there was music in the family growing up. Because to be an 11-year-old and deciding that country and western was where you were going to go, it probably suggests there was some in the environment around you.
Yeah, well, so, I'm sort of breaking the rules because we got brought up on classical music.
Okay.
I've got no knowledge of the Oz rock scene or anything like that, you know, to the point where people can't believe there are songs that I don't know, but I just don't, you know. But then we got some horses when we were kids, and then I just thought, oh, well, getting, you know, I'm going to start listening to a bit of Slim Dusty. Mum and Dad didn't, you know. And then they were sort of, Dad was wishing that I'd probably pursue another side, but they were very supportive later on. So.
Yeah. So it's all.
Peter, I grew up. Kathleen. I grew up on country and western as well. Yeah. And like, in fact, you know, my brothers I was like 6 or 7 and they'd be making me learn harmonies to the latest country songs, you know, and lots of country music festivals and things like that. Oh, so I'm all for country and western. We probably were hanging out together.
So who were you listening to?
I wouldn't know the names of the artists, like the songs, you know, Knock on Your Door and, you know, all of those old songs that we used to sing all the time, you know. Yeah.
So it's like with that immersion in just the form of music, that music is something that's integral to life, is part of it. But then I like it, Pete, that you said you got a horse, therefore country and western. So how much of how much does that choice of where we go is influenced by things around us? So, you know, because depending on which horse you could have gone right into that Spanish movement and the, you know, the Spanish music. And so can we talk a little bit about how those things in our everyday life, there's something in our life that draws us in a way that needs to be filled or explored or explained through, and the arts is a way of doing that. It's a way of enriching that experience or expanding it or giving us a pathway that's different to what the concrete everydayness of, you know, a horse in a paddock means.
Be inspiration. Well, it can be inspiration. Like, well, where did I go as far as music goes? When I got to 17 or 18, it was not cool to be singing country music in a band with my brother. So I just stopped singing and performing at all. And I didn't do anything for a really long time. And then friends of mine were involved in musical theatre, local community theatre group, and convinced me to audition for a show, and I got in, and they didn't, and which, you know, didn't make them happy. And then I got absolutely as well, that's no longer actually. but there was like, you know, I'm a life member of that theatre group now, and was heavily involved both on stage and off, and grew to love the organisation and how art was made and how it formed people, and there were a lot of young people involved, so we were used to encourage their talents, and so all of those things became really important to me as a part of art. I'm not sure that at the time I thought of it as art. I can look back now and see that that it was absolutely creative and about teaching people how to grow and how to extend their skills and how to be a part of a group and how to work as a team and, you know, all of those things. Mm. But it was all done, how to think creatively, you know, on committees, how to come up with creative ways to solve problems. You know, that's all art. You know, it's all a part of what we do. And so I think for me that was my journey. And then luckily, because I'd been so heavily involved in community theatre, a job came up in the arts that matched a skill that I'd learnt in the volunteer realm and got a gig in the arts industry and sort of just flew from there, which was really great. But you know, I think that art is, you know, it can either be, you know, really grassroots or it can be high end or anything in between, and it doesn't matter. Like it I think we all engage with art all the time. You know, we listen, as Pete said, you watch a movie, you're listening to the music in the movie. Somebody made that music, somebody wrote the script for the movie, someone, you know, had to do all the acting or directing or whatever, or make the costumes. Everything that we do, we listen to music, we watch a movie, we have photographs or paintings hanging in our houses, we wear clothes that have been designed by somebody, we are, you know, sitting on furniture that somebody made. They're every single one of those people are artists in some way, shape or form. They might not all think of themselves in that way. So I think that everybody has some, you know, art touches everybody all the time, and it's just a matter of how we experience that and how deeply we want to experience that. You know, in these times, you know, it's integral to the way we see the world at the minute. You know, that artists saved us when COVID first put us into lockdown. You know, if it wasn't for artists making things and putting things online, we'd all be sitting back going, what the hell's going on, you know? There was when I was doing a bit of research, reading the quotes that you'd sort of sent through, there was another quote that came up that said, so it's all about trying to find the best fit between your talents and what the world can offer at that point in time. And I loved that, because I think that's what we do at Regional Arts Victoria is we don't tell artists what to do or how to make work. We hold their hand while they go and make work, and we give help to give them confidence, and we, you know, don't tell them they have to make work and sell it. They can just make work and be, you know, and do and create. And that's what's important, I think. So sorry, yeah. I'm raving now.
No, you're not. Not at all. Pam, Liz has clearly developed a language around understanding art as both industry and the components of art to make sense of the experience. You know, you said earlier that just playing music didn't feel like you were in the arts. Do you have language now around what it is that performance, playing, listening to music does for you and for those who come to hear you perform?
Well, that's a, it's hard to sort of put that into one sentence really, because it's this, talking about components, I guess there are, when I'm off, when I've got a gig somewhere and I've got to travel, you know, there's part of you saying, it's work, you know, because it is my job, and I think, oh, it's great to have this job, and I get to go here, and I'll see these people. I haven't seen them for a couple of years, and there's all those things going on. But one of the things, I guess, because I work with an upright bass player a lot, but outside that, it's usually just solos. So I guess freedom's a word that comes into mind a lot, because I'm very lucky that I get to do, like sort of what Liz was saying, no one is really telling me what I've got to do. Or I might get an outline for a job, for instance. Like a lot of the stuff that I get booked for is comedy. I'll get booked because I do of comedy songs, and you know, I've been booked on jobs where I'm just booked to MC, and that really is because I've done comedy, you know, that sort of seems to go hand in hand. And that to me is part of, like, you know, that you've got to do that job properly too. You can't just sort of say, oh, this is easy. I don't find emceeing overly difficult, I've got to say, but that's probably because I've done comedy, and I can sort of, I feel, and it doesn't mean when I emcee either that I've got to go out and tell gags all the time. If it calls for that, I'll do it. But if not, I'll just, you know, that was, this is, so yeah, enjoy this act, you know. And another thing that, talking about the freedom, I heard Barry Humphries say once about, he said, sometimes I get out there on the stage and I think, oh, alone at last, you know. Oh. Like I've just, and I thought, oh, that, not that I'm putting myself in that category of comedy performer, when I heard him say that, I thought, oh, yeah, I know what that means, because sometimes you get out and you just think, oh, this is where, I do feel very much at home there. And there's that freedom that I've just got. For instance, for fear of raving on here, but I got a job a few years ago with a really unexpected job with Lee Kernighan, you know, and Lee rang me up and said, what are you doing next year, Pete? Would you be interested in this? I said, yeah. And I was a bit puzzled. I thought, why would he be wanting me on his gig? And I just assumed he wanted me to play fiddle in the band. And I said, so you want me to play fiddle? He said, oh, no, more rhythm guitar. And I'm thinking, no one's ever booked me to play rhythm guitar. You know, I'm not really a guitarist. But he said, yeah, there might be fiddle for a few songs, but mostly guitar, because I'm not really a, you know, I take my hands off the guitar a lot. I just want, I said, okay, that's what you want. So he already had a support act who were doing like a half hour set, and then there was a break, and then Lee would come out afterwards. But they gave me 15 minutes at the start of the gig, and I managed to cram 5 songs into 15 minutes. But I'm going to use this. The worst night I had, because I'd get up there, and it was, Pete, who's this? Who the hell's that then? And but one night he was playing Burswood Casino in Perth, and it's an enormous stage, and there was my mic out in the centre there. And at the start of the show, I just walked out, and it was like I walked 200 metres to this mic, and for 15 minutes I had that stage. The room was full, you know. That was the greatest, it was a really good feeling that night, you know, just that feeling of freedom, like this is my real estate for 15 minutes.
Yeah. So do you think if you're experiencing that sense of freedom, and a sense of freedom on your own without constraint, which is what I understand from the Barry Humphries quote, that his aloneness is not loneliness or isolation.
His aloneness is a sense
of control and of here I am, here I stand. This is who I am.
And this is what I do. This is what I do. This is the space that I do it in, and I don't have to share it with anybody, even though I've got an audience in front of me. There's nothing like performing.
Exactly. So for many of us, I mean, our working lives are never like that. Like my boss is on the screen here, and you know, some of my colleagues are here, and I've got a whole lot of things around me that constrain me. So do you think some of what I see when I see a solo performance is the freedom that I could never enjoy? Is that what I'm learning from?
Absolutely.
Is that part of what you're giving me?
I think that's part of what you're giving me. I think that also on watching you perform, I'm getting lost in if it's Pete singing a country song that's got a story, or if it's a comedy, it's making me, you know, I might relate to it. I might have had the same experience. I might just feel happy or sad or angry or whatever. I might not agree with what Pete's singing, or, you know, all of those things. Anytime we're watching a performance of any sort, it's about the experience, but it's also about the experience of, and this is what's hard in COVID times. It's also, if you're going to a concert, it's about the experience of being in the space and perhaps being with a group of people and friends, and you might have gone out for dinner beforehand. So that's kind of what's missing at the minute as well. And so, you know, performances that we're watching at the minute, we're in our own little space and somebody else is in their little space, and that they are still able to touch us in some way, shape or form is pretty, pretty special, really. Mm. I think that, you know, with performing, you know, being able to get on a stage or whatever, you know, and not just performing, even making a work or drawing or creating in some way, shape or form. Mm. I think that's allowing me to have, I'll use my family history writing experience. You know, as I said, I don't feel like I'm a writer, but when I sit down and I'm at my laptop and I'm just letting all these thoughts come out of my head and go onto that paper, there's nobody else around me. Nobody's asking me for anything. I've got no demands on me. I'm not answering a phone. I'm not answering an email. I'm just lost in my own space of making something that's making me feel good. And if nobody ever reads it, it doesn't matter, because for me, it's getting it out of me and onto a space. And it's the same if I'm drawing, you know, if I'm doing a drawing or if I'm singing. I'm sure you'd agree, Peter, sometimes, you know, you just want to sing because you just want to sing. You know, how many of us put music on and sing at the top of our voices in the house because we can, or dance or whatever, you know. It's not, as you said at the start, Kathleen, it's not always about the economics or the can we sell the work, or you know, are we going to have our work in a gallery or whatever. You know, art really should be about the making and just about being able to just engage and do something. And, you know, we were talking at our team meeting this morning. We had a big long talk about this. I've got a regional team of pretty extraordinary people who are out talking to artists and creatives all the time, every day. That's their job. They're on the phone, or, you know, when they can travel, they're out in the region talking to people. And some of the things that they talked about, you know, I just wanted to know for them, you know, what they thought the consolation was of art for people in the communities. You know, what did they think the communities got out of it? And some of the things that they talked about was that art's a distraction. You know, it can be a distraction. If we're reading a book, it's distracting us from everyday things that might be happening around us. We get lost in that space. It can be a career. It can be a hobby. It could be therapy in some instances. It can be a lead. It can be not a lead. It can create conversations. It's simple and accessible and easy for most people. And there was an example that one of the team members gave that I'm going to use because it was a brilliant one. After the fires in one of the regions over in Gippsland, there was a group of people that kind of wanted to get some funding to do a project, but there was no money around at the time. We didn't have any funding available. And they ended up just taking it upon themselves to make this thing happen. And they went and bought a whole heap of disposable cameras, gave them to all the kids in the community and said, just go and take some photos. And they didn't say you have to take photos of fire-related things or anything like that, because it was after the bushfires. But, you know, just go and take some photos. And he was talking this morning about how this project is just, it's extraordinary. And they've put them up on fences and places all around the town with bread ties and bits and pieces. Like, so it's not, they're not in a gallery, they're not framed, they're not anything. They've just stuck them around all over the place, and the kids are all wandering around looking at them. It's a beautiful idea, you know. Art doesn't have to
so
be...
So what does seeing those photos bring to that community then, do you think? What do you think the people looking at those images through... So they're seeing the community through the eyes of the children of that community.
That's correct. And so they're seeing, you know...
Is that
perhaps... No, go on. Sorry.
Is that its sole benefit? Is that its sole purpose?
I think the purpose was... there were numerous purposes for it. I think that one of them was to distract the kids, and you know, some of those kids had had some pretty awful experiences. This particular town had been really, really, really heavily affected. So it distracted those kids and gave them an opportunity to do something else. Some of the kids did take photos of fire damage and bits and pieces, and so for them maybe it was a little bit of, you know, living through that experience. But I think it gave them a voice through those photos. You know, those kids were able to say to adults things that they maybe couldn't say in words but could say in a photograph. And how cool is that, you know?
Yeah.
And plus, I guess the other thing is that, you know, then adults are seeing, as you say, the world through the kids' eyes, but also maybe seeing things that they'd never seen before in their town. And the kids get to share those things with parents and grandparents and brothers and sisters
in that non-verbal way that's always hard,
and not just for kids, you know, grown-ups don't always, you know, we can't always talk about what we're feeling, what we're thinking and what's happening. So, you know, sometimes art's the best way to do that.
Pete, you said before that, you know, if you're making beer, then there's making beer music, and you know, you'll put different forms of music on. Is that what it does as well? Does it bypass the need to try to express the experience, or does it augment the experience in some way, or take you out of one mood and put you into another?
Yeah, I think that's probably what it does. I mean, as Liz was saying, mentioned therapy there. I think, you know, whether music, or I'm just talking about music now, but this could be any of the art, you know, it could be visual, yeah, sitting at a ballet or sitting at a play or whatever it might be. But I think, you know, no matter how it stimulates you, more often than not, it's a form of therapy some way or another, you know. And that, you know, even I've done a few online shows since this, the whole thing's the lockdowns and all that, but... And you notice people really like to write comments as you're going. You know, I don't want to sort of always be focusing on a screen. And I say that at the start of my gigs. I don't want to be looking at this screen all the time. I want to do my gig. But then you realise that people do like to be acknowledged when, you know, when you see their name come up and you mention them. Someone in the lounge room, someone's going, oh, that's me, you know. Or and then they start talking to each other. And that's the other thing that happens at a live show, particularly, I guess, I'm thinking comedy here, but whether or not it's comedy, but there is that, so while as a performer, I'm in my own little space here, and I sort of realise that if these people have specifically come to see my gig, a lot of these people who may have been coming to my gigs for years, they're like my boss, you know, they've been paying my bills for a long time. And I sort of, even though I've got that freedom to do what I want, I still sort of feel an obligation not to go too out of this. And I'm just speaking personally here, but I guess my gigs, I don't want them walking out saying, well, I'm never going back to see him again. You know? I want him to come back. But it is.
So there's a relationship between
the artist as
performer.
I think, like at my gigs particularly, and not just mine particularly, but I don't know always that the audience realises how much of a part of the show they actually are. I actually think they're 50%, because if I get up and do, say, a 30-minute set and it's mostly comedy and the audience doesn't really respond, it's a bad show, you know. But no one will say it was a bad audience. Most people say he wasn't much good, you know. That comes back on the performer. But when it's a good show, when it goes really great, that's when the audience don't realise that either, because they come up and tell me how good I am when I'm thinking, you were pretty damn good tonight too, you know, because it's a two-way street. And it's a funny thing, you know, I did a gig at a club in Hay one night, and sitting right in front of me, there was this bloke sitting back on his chair like that. He had his arms like that.
Lovely.
Right in front of me. He didn't laugh. He didn't smile. He hardly clapped all night. And I'm just thinking to myself, why the hell would you sit right there in front of me when you hate this so much? And at the end of the gig, everyone sort of walked out and not many people came up to say g'day. He was one of the blokes that came up to say g'day. And he said, oh, mate, he said, I really enjoyed that tonight. Thanks very much. I had a ball. And I thought, okay, I'm never judging anyone in the audience again. But you always see that. I always see those people. And funnily enough, about 3 years later, I was playing another gig somewhere in a huge shed and they were all listening. And there was one guy right down the back who was just, you know, leaning on the table like that, looking at me, no reaction. And I thought to myself, all I could see was him. And I just thought, wouldn't it be funny if that bloke was the same as that guy in Hay? And, you know, he was. He came up at the end and said, oh, mate, you got any CDs? I really enjoyed that. Why didn't you let me know at the time? You know?
But sometimes we find... But I was just going to say, sometimes, you know, there's been different shows and stuff that I've been involved in, and the people, or even if it's like Zooms or other bits and pieces, and sometimes people are so intently listening that they don't seem to react or respond in any way, shape or form because they're so into it. They don't want to miss anything, you know, so they don't even laugh or smile. You know, it's interesting the different ways people experience the work as well. It's great.
I love it. Which brings us nicely to the point where I say, if anyone would like to make a comment or take part in the conversation, we'd really welcome your contribution. So you don't have to have a question. You can just make a comment, not just make a comment. You can make a comment. You can add some ideas or thoughts to the conversation. So please don't hesitate either in the chat, through the chat function, which Jenny moderates for us, or just, you know, give me a wave and you can come on in. I'm again, I want to come back to this relationship between the art and the person experiencing that art. And Liz, I loved it that you said sometimes you've just got to sit with it and absorb it and think about it, that you can't even respond on a temporally, it's not like in time with what's happening, because it can often trigger so many things at the same time. How does that relationship happen with static art? So with galleries of art that can still move us, and you know, we can be connected to a Vermeer or a Monet or you know, so even art that speaks to us about history can still have that, we can still feel that relationship. How does that happen? What's happening there?
Yeah, I think that, and I'm not a visual arts connoisseur, so bear with me here, but that's okay. And I'll tell you a funny story about that, in fact.
Okay.
But I think that you know, all sorts of art, including visual art, is again about how someone interprets it. So things like Monet is easy to interpret. You can see what the picture is and you can visualize that in your brain and make some sort of connection. You either like the color or you like the flower or the water, or you know, it makes you feel something. I think the same happens with contemporary art, but not everybody always understands contemporary art. So what will happen is people will walk away and they might talk about it whether they get it or they don't get it or whatever, you know, there's always a conversation about it afterwards. You know, I think that's when we're experiencing any sort of art, it's about our interpretation of what we're seeing or what we're hearing or what we're looking at. But I think great art makes us talk about stuff later as well, and things that are challenging or you know, I know when I was working, I'm from regional Victoria originally, and I moved from regional Victoria to the city to look after regional people, which was really quite ironic. But when I was in regional Victoria, I was, you know, working in a local government, and I was working as a support to a festival and working in a box office. Now, there was a whole heap of art sort of stuff at the start of my arts industry career, I guess. But the my boss at the time used to bring really challenging work into the Performing Arts Centre that we were based in. And for me, that was probably the founding experience of me understanding that art was bigger than what I was just seeing in front of me, because there was work that I didn't get. I didn't understand what they were doing on the stage, but it intrigued me. And there were people, I don't know if anybody's ever seen Strange Fruit, but there were these people, dancers on the end of poles in the middle of a garden, you know, and doing really amazingly extraordinary things in the air that I had never seen before, you know. Another organisation called Bamboozled that were made a structure out of bamboo and then did like aerial ballet off it. And I just was astounded and couldn't understand how that was even art, you know. Is that real? You know, it opened my eyes up to so many different experiences, and whether I liked them or not, it created conversation, and I'm still talking about it now 20 years later, you know. And it's amazing how art can affect people and art can touch people and in so many different ways, right down to, you know, you're binge watching the latest thing on Netflix and you might talk about it for 3 weeks later. You know, we finished binge watching a thing the other night and we're still talking about it because it's just bizarre, you know. So yeah, I don't know if that's even answered your question.
Yeah, no, it's good, because I think it touches on that relationship between the artists and the audience, and what the person experiencing the art, whether it's creative performance, decorative, you know, when you touch and hold pieces that someone has actually made, you know, and you can feel their hands sort of smooth pieces of wood or knitted fabric together, knitted things together to make fabric. It sets up that relationship, and you're immediately sorting out how it's affecting you and why it might be affecting you and what it's saying about you. And Peter comes back to that. Sorry, just that. I just want to touch on. You know, Pete, you spoke about not wanting necessarily to push your audience too far in new music. You know, people are still talking about Bob Dylan going electric, you know.
So
there are these shifts that happen in performers as well. So can you talk to me a little bit about how, you know, Liz spoke about that notion of the potential for art to challenge us, and that good art can do that. And you've got this relationship with an audience that you're nurturing and supporting. Is there space for challenge in that?
Oh, there is. Yeah, look, I think while you were just saying that, I was thinking to myself, yeah, maybe, am I a totally sort of a safe? but no, I guess I do. The way I would push boundaries, you know, some people might say, well, they're not really even boundaries, but a lot of the stuff, say with my comedy stuff, with my straight songs, I guess a lot of them, I don't do sort of your standard, not a lot of your standard sort of broken heart or she's my gal sort of country songs. A lot of mine's... I've done a couple of albums that have had a lot to do with Yak and Dander history. So within that, you know, I don't sort of go much. I stay pretty much within that paddock of this is the Yak and Dander history. This happened there, that happened there. But with the comedy stuff, yeah, I guess if you call it boundary pushing, my stuff would be sort of trying to create a bit of an image that people might not have thought about. So I get a lot of, particularly with the comedy stuff, I get a lot of people saying, oh, I've got a good idea for a song for you. Or, oh, look, you'll be writing a few songs about that. And I rarely do that. Usually if I'm writing, like say, I've written two songs that have to do with the COVID thing, and that's going to be it for me. I've got no intention of going further. I think we've all had enough of that word. But I wrote one about, or someone said, oh, you'll be writing something about toilet paper when that all that crazy stuff is happening. And I thought, no, I'm not going to write a song about it. It's too obvious. You know, you get on YouTube and there's all these songs. There's no toilet paper left. I think, I'm not gonna. But then I thought, oh, no, I did get a bit of an idea. So I wrote one from the point of view of the CEO of a toilet paper corporation, you know, and he was like, so I wrote it as a positive thing. Like, this toilet paper craze is just fantastic because we're making heaps of money. So that's the sort of the, I don't know if that's even boundary pushing, but I like to just go somewhere a little different, you know, with some of my stuff.
Yeah.
It's not, look, my stuff's not, as I say to people with my comedy, it's not cutting edge. It's just stupid, you know.
Doesn't have to be
though. That's great. I love that.
Yeah, that's right. Like just to
it is pretty
to
basic,
make work is great, you know.
Yeah. And
not all work has to be challenging.
You know, no, it doesn't.
That wasn't my point I was making too.
No,
I realise that. And I guess sometimes where I might get a chance to sort of have a bit of a crack at that as if I'm at a bluegrass festival and I'm chucked in a jam that's sort of over my head with much better musicians. And then that's when I'll, you know, it'll be a time where what you're saying, Liz, it's not, there might be people around listening to the jam, but I might be there on my fiddle and then someone throws me a solo and all of a sudden think, oh, what can I do here? And that's where I can go and have a good time there, you know.
And that's where you can be in that space of your own little lonely space, you know.
It is like that. It's a bit like that.
Yeah. Jen, I know that the chat function just suddenly went pop. Is there anything there you want to point us in the direction of?
Well, I think, you know, all of these comments will be of interest to other people and to Liz and Pete. I think there's a lot of people commenting that they're agreeing. They're saying, yes,
okay,
this is how I'm feeling and this is what I think about art as well. There was a little, Kelly had a bit of advice for Pete.
Kelly, do you want to have a chat with Pete?
I need to trim my eyebrows, do I?
My son is just on his meeting right next to me. He's just started, so I apologize to everyone if you can hear some things in the background.
That's
hi,
okay.
And thank you for having me. I actually, full disclosure, I actually work with Lizzie at Regional Arts Victoria. And Pete, I recently reached out to you in my previous role, but we'll talk offline about that.
Oh, yeah, yeah, right.
Hi,
yeah, actually,
I nice had to meet you officially.
Nice,
and look,
yeah.
I just got your email. So hi, everyone. Thanks for having me. This has been really, really awesome to hear you guys talking. Something. I'm a performer of 20 years and have been a touring musician. And I said to Pete, don't tell the audience that how important they are, because it ruins the illusion. But it's true that it is a real relationship, and they're in my experience, without how much the audience dictates a show is phenomenal. As a performer that performs night after night, you get it's not just your external experiences in the day. It's like what happens in the moment there is so led by that audience, and it really determines the outcome. And that's what's so addictive about touring. But, you know, it seems like ages ago for me anyway. But anyway.
Thanks so much,
that was
Kelly.
My contribution.
Thanks, Kelly.
Would anyone else like to add to the conversation at the moment? That's okay. You don't have to. So, Pete, it might be time for a song.
Yes, please.
This is fantastic. Now, all your dreams come true.
Can't wait.
And Lizzie, absolutely fine if you hum along.
No, I'm fine, thanks. I did threaten to do a harmony or something, but I won't.
one I wrote. I had the lyrics floating around for a long time, and I just only finished this a few weeks ago. And it's I haven't been doing a lot of singing. I've been playing a lot of fiddle, playing a lot of mandolin, and haven't been doing a lot of singing. And there's a bit of falsetto in this, so it could be a bit out of tune. But anyway, I'll give it a crack. It's 3 a.m., I'm wide awake, I can't get back to sleep. The rest of the world is snoring, I feel that I could weep. I've tried to shut my brain off, and I've counted a million sheep. I've popped a couple of tablets, but I still can't get to sleep. It's amazing when you're trying to sleep, activity in the mind. I think of people who cheese me off, there are plenty of them I find. I try to forget them during the day, then into the dark they creep. And get in my brain and taunt me while I'm trying to sleep. Can you hear that all right?
Yeah.
All right. I think of my wife asleeping and how unfair it seems. She's skipping through fields of flowers and dancing through happy dreams. She's peacefully buzzing beside me. It's messing with my brain. I'm really tempted to wake her so she can feel my pain. I try my stomach and then my side, it's driving me berserk. I sigh and swear and kick at the sheets as if that's gonna work. And all of the rest of the whole wide world is enjoying slumber deep. I know I'm not an insomniac, I just can't get to sleep. My bladder doesn't... my bladder... Oh, is it? My bladder, when this, hang on, gee, that's how fresh this song is. My bladder, when it gives a warning, there's no choice but to obey. Two little glasses of water somehow magically grow into a couple of buckets as the night drags on so slow. The alarm clock doesn't like me and only gives me hell. Have a look at the time and says, come on, you might as well. I resist the urge as long as I can, then have a little peep. Time always moves at different speeds while I'm trying to sleep. Is it just my imagination or is it brighter in the room? Can I hear a bird outside? My heart is filled with gloom. But then just like a miracle, a weary feeling creeps. I'm slowly dozing off now. I'm going to get some sleep. The bedside clock has been unplugged and thrown against the wall. My phone is set to flight mode so nobody can call. Then a garbage truck sings out my name in a rumbling voice so deep. You forgot to take your bins out. Now try to get some sleep.
Fantastic.
Oh, gee, that bladder line, I'm just trying to think. There we go, flying without a safety net there.
In the few minutes we've got left, there's some research that's just been released, and I can't even, I'm embarrassed to say I've forgotten. It's just gone out of my head. It's not coming. That's actually showing an improvement in levels of loneliness. This is research that's come out of the UK, and they've done some global studies. So they've been tracking the COVID pandemic, and there's lots of previous research on loneliness. But in fact, people are now connecting in ways that they haven't before. So some of that connection has obviously occurred through electronically, and people are being creative in those connections. So can we just, you know, we've only got a couple of minutes left, but if you can just end in what do you think we get in terms of hope and a sense of who we are as people in this shared experience through that sense of creativity and connection. If that's not too long-winded a question, which is sometimes what I do.
No, that's okay. It's just articulating, and there's so many opportunities I think that this has created. You know, so many people are connecting in ways that they've never realised they could connect before. And you know, in times when, and even just when we think about the climate and environment, you know, we were talking about this at work the other day, you know, the amount of travel that we would do to go to a 1 hour meeting and then return again, you know, and now we know that we can do that on Zoom, but you know, is that enough? You know, is that connection face to face as in, you know, that's important too. So I think that I hope that we as a world see the good in this and the changes that we can make for the environment and for each other as far as connecting goes. I hope that we don't all go back to the same old work life that is, you know, incredibly, you know, we're all always too busy to talk to each other. I think people are making more time to talk to each other now because they need each other more and they need that connection more. But it worries me that we will all go back to normal, you know, when things return to the normal that it is. And I hope that doesn't happen. But I think that artists are leading the way in that. I think there's a lot of people out there making work or making that creative thinking that I was thinking about before. You know, people are thinking in ways that probably that they've never thought before, even if they aren't artists. They're, you know, that you see it with just even normal organisations and the way they're approaching advertising or marketing, you know, that they're looking at things in a different way because they have to and they need to. I think that when we come out the other end of this, we're going to be over-marketed too. I think that there's going to be so many people out there that are going to try and sell us stuff now that we're out of restrictions. You know, there's going to be a bit of that happening as well. But you know, I guess I think that artists are leading the way and I think we need to all think about our contribution to that and the ways in which we can make our lives better, make our lives about that connecting and sharing and caring for each other in the way that people are caring for each other at the minute. You know, how many things are you seeing where people are just doing really nice things for each other, people in the street? You know, I was before I moved to regional Victoria, this time I've moved back to regional Victoria just recently, last month, which is wonderful. I'm really pleased to have been able to do that and lucky. But when I was in the city, I was on a part of a Facebook group in the suburb that I was in and you would just see on that Facebook group, all of these people doing really kind things for elderly people and you know, just sharing things that probably they would never have done in non-COVID times, you know. So I hope that doesn't change. I hope that we continue to be kind and generous and caring, and I hope that we don't go back to a ridiculous busy life that is all about economy and money and not about people and culture and art.
Well said.
Art can help us. Pete, how can the arts then, you know, help us and music and your art that is simple at its heart, an instrument and a person and a voice and a room, teach us what matters, what's of value in this push we're going to get to be consumers par excellence.
I think sometimes, particularly with the performing arts, it's not, you know, you don't even, it's just people will want it just for the sake of it, I think sometimes. It's funny, mum and dad, back in the days of film, mum and dad had a one-hour photo lab in Wangaratta there for a while. And it was interesting, even in sort of hard economic times, people always took photos. And when you look at back in the days of the Depression, you know, photography was, there's heaps of photos of the Depression. Mm. So that's why, and particularly performing arts is one thing that people turn to those. So photography and entertainment of some sort, whether it could be sport too, you know, because there's a very, that social aspect of sport. But there's also that social aspect in the arts too, probably more so than people realise, because, you know, if you might be going to watch a show, but you might be there with 200 other people and you're all on the same journey in the same room. So I think sometimes that's just the importance of it, is that feeling of, you know, solidarity with the group. Perhaps that's also what the COVID thing has done, like outside the arts. A lot of people I know, it's brought a lot of people together simply because everyone's feeling the same sorts of anxieties and everything. All I'm hoping is that, one of the things I'm hoping is that people hang on to the chooks that they've bought in these times, because it's good to have them in the backyard.
Well, thank you so much for giving up your time to be part of the conversation hour today. We really appreciate your generosity in being with us today.
Thanks, Kathleen.
If I can ask everyone to, the evaluation for this is always be to put in the chat function a couple of words of how you found the session today. So if you just want to open up a chat box and just a quick summary of what you thought about the session. We have a webpage on the Upper Hugh and Primary Care Partnerships webpage called The Conversation Hour, and there'll be an audio of today available on there, and any references or any other material that we think relevant, Naomi pops up there for us as well. So and that's it. That's the end of the conversation hour.
Thanks very much, Kathleen.
Thank you. Nice to
have
met you, Peter.
Nice to meet you too,
thanks,
Liz.
Thanks, everyone. Yeah, keep in touch.
Thanks.
Yeah. And if anybody wants to contact us at Regional Arts Victoria, but make sure we might get you to put the link up of that too, Kathleen. And we're very happy to keep in contact with people and talk about our funding. And there's funding specifically for the Northeast at the minute. So
lovely. I'm sure that'll be of interest to our audience. So thank you very much.
Right. Terrific.
Thank you, everyone.
Thanks a lot. Take care. See you later.
Bye now.
Bye.